On many occasions, a murderer is given a nickname by the press, and it becomes part of the story going forwards. A killer being given a nickname that they themselves coined is unusual. Yet he didn't actually call himself anything, just wrote the words on the wall in the blood of his victim. What the words relate to is still unclear because he won't talk to psychiatrists, but the journalists that he will talk to haven't been able to get an answer either. This is the case of Jaime Osuna, and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Murder Me on Monday podcast. I'm Cameron, and joined with me is Mother.
Hello. We have a listener suggestion again from the lovely Hello Flatface. One I did not know, and I hope is new to you all too. Let us start in Bakersfield, California, a well-known city in Kern County with a population of just under 400,000. There, on the 7th of March 1988, Jaime was born. We know nothing about his father. His mother claims he was violent and assaulted her when she was pregnant and almost full term, and they split up just before Jaime was born. One article I found claimed that the assault caused a cleft ear in the unborn Jaime, not a term I was familiar with, and according to medical texts, it can just be a birth deformity with no known cause. Looking at photos of him, it is visible that he has damage to an earlobe, but it's perfectly possible that this was from something else, such as an earring being pulled out. The childhood pictures do not show a full profile, so it's impossible to tell if he had it as a child, which makes that part of the story unverifiable. Jaime's mother had an older child, not by the same man. The grandparents apparently raised him, but I don't know if it's maternal or paternal. Jaime's mother then meets and settles down with a guy called Jeff. Jeff is not a good man, by all accounts. Jeff tied a 5-year-old Jaime to a tree and whipped him. There may be police reports on that, as Jeff may or may not have been arrested.
I'm not up to date on the most cutting edge of parental care here, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that that's some sort of primitive parenting style. Whipping a 5-year-old child. They're five.
Yeah. There was also one occasion that Jaime was in a car seat, as small children have to be. And Jeff threw the seat containing Jaime out of a moving car. No idea if the police were involved or any hospital records. Reports of Jaime being made to watch whilst step-siblings ate and he was refused food. When he was fed, he was made to eat off the floor. Cannot verify, as Jeff died in 2007. There was also one time that an uncle threw a brick at him. No idea on the circumstances surrounding that alleged assault.
It's giving big Cinderella vibes for some reason. Yeah. Eating off the floor, step-siblings being treated better than you.
Yeah, exactly. But then we have Jaime, at the age of 9, killing animals. I'm not getting into that, but it's gruesome. Jaime drops out of school in the 9th grade. What age would that be, Cameron? I'm useless at these.
Something like 12, 13, maybe. I don't know how kindergarten forms, whether or not it's the same as our reception. But if you're in year 9 to 9th grade, that's around somewhere being, I don't know, 13 to 15-ish.
Yeah. Right. That makes sense, because he joins a gang. He gets into drugs. His preference was apparently meth. It's thought that his first arrest was at the age of 15. That's surprising to me if true. I thought he'd be much younger. That was for an assault using a deadly weapon. Obviously, as it's a well-worn path now how these kids spiral, he moves on to getting arrested for drugs and more assaults.
A lot of gangs have a jump-in procedure where the younger you are, the easier it is. So if you're, say, 12 years old, you get beaten up for 12 seconds. If you're 25, you get beaten up for 25 seconds. It's much easier to get beaten up for a shorter period of time.
Yeah.
And gangs like to use young kids because their sentencing is far less.
Yeah.
You can get out within a couple of months and come straight back to it. But if you're over the age of 21, you're, what, in prison for years?
That makes sense from what you've just said, in that I have heard of gang initiations, but I didn't know about the beating up.
Not every gang will do it, but it's called a jump in, yeah.
What Jamie goes to prison for, I don't know. But by the age of 20, he is on parole and goes with a friend to the friend's aunt's house for a party. The aunt is called Jane. She's 37 years old, and the party was for her 16-year-old son. As with a lot of house parties, underage drinking was taking place, and Jane joined in the fun, dancing with some of the lads who were young enough to be her children. The dancing got a bit risque, and Jane's nephew that had brought Jamie along wasn't happy with that. The nephew goes and complains to Jamie, read it as wound him up, probably knowing full well that Jamie wasn't adverse to throwing his street credentials about, and Jamie, true to form, complied. He goes and grabs the largest knife he can find in the kitchen and stabs this lad who was getting down dirty dancing with Aunt Jane.
So Jamie's at a party with, I don't know, Fred.
Yeah.
It's Jane's party. Jane is Fred's auntie.
Yes.
Some kid is dancing with Jane.
Yes.
Fred says, I don't like that.
Yes.
Jamie stabs him.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Okay, that escalated quite quickly. Did you try talking first?
No. This was a flesh wound to the leg. It could have been serious if it had hit an artery. Luckily, it wasn't serious, but the police are called. Jamie was arrested for assault and violating his parole, and Aunt Jane got in trouble for the underage drinking. So back into the slammer goes Jamie. But he is rather taken with the attractive but much older Aunt Jane and starts to write to her from prison. Aunt Jane was rather taken with this toy boy that told her everything that she wanted to hear.
But you just saw him stab someone.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't even that he was jealous. It was that his friend didn't like a guy dancing with his aunt.
Yes.
Do these bode as good personality traits for a relationship? And the fact he's the age of your child almost.
Oh, do they ever. You see, when Jane met Jamie, he was a fresh-faced, good-looking young man. When she goes to collect him after doing his latest stint in jail, he greeted her with his newest face tattoos. Not an excessive amount, but still, it would maybe have put some people off. Lot more common these days, but these were prison tats, black and crude in design. Jane was not repulsed, or at least not enough to turn down this Lothario who swept her off to a hotel for the night.
I want to add, not an excessive amount of face tattoos. From prison is saying, like, it's not an excessive amount of heroin. Still heroin. You still got a face tattoo from prison.
Yes.
What are you doing?
Yes, just you wait. For a 38-year-old woman to get pregnant from what should have been a one-off tryst is a bit stupid.
Do you talk more about his face tattoos later? Because I want to.
I do. Now, Jane should have known better. You see, she was a former prison psych nurse who had to retire on medical grounds after getting battered by a prisoner. Jane tells Jamie about the pregnancy. Jamie convinced her that he would be the perfect father. And after all, as she had been medically retired, she needed help with everything, as the pregnancy left her bedbound a lot of the time. Jane paid the bills, presumably from her disability benefits and maybe maintenance for her older child, who would have been around 17. Doesn't appear that Jamie had any legitimate source of income. Things are moving at the speed of light now. Jamie's out of prison. Pregnant Jane agrees to marry Jamie, which they do in Jamie's grandmother's back garden in 2009. The marriage doesn't make Jamie happy because he becomes controlling and possessive over Jane, and the resurgence of his meth habit won't have helped. The police were frequent visitors to Jane's house. Jamie would get arrested and thrown inside for domestic violence, only to get out, and the cycle would continue until Jane pulled the plug on this disaster of a marriage. The marriage being over didn't stop Jamie wanting to have some sort of power over Jane. After all, they had a child together, so he just resorted to ringing her and giving her abuse. Until one unusual call from Jamie, who had been out of prison about a week in November of 2011. He says on the call, "Watch the news, bitch. I killed the woman at the Morocco." Jamie was referring to the El Morocco Motel on Golden State Avenue in Bakersfield. One article actually said the murders took place at the El Morocco Motel on Golden State Avenue, Desert Hot Springs, an hour and 40 miles east of Los Angeles. And I was baffled when the map said that's almost 250 miles from Bakersfield. And why would Jane even know the place existed? Turns out there is an El Morocco Motel in Desert Hot Springs with an almost identical address. And it's quite a nice place with good reviews on TripAdvisor. The one in Bakersfield is not on TripAdvisor, but still seems to exist. Jane had no clue what Jamie was talking about. There was nothing on the news. But Jane, knowing Jamie was probably capable of something, rings the local police, who were, "Nope, we have no reports of anything, but thanks for letting us know." 13th of November 2011, just a few days after that phone call from Jamie, Jane turns on the TV and there are the police at the motel, and it's reported a body has been found. Turns out the police didn't look, didn't make any inquiries because, well, I guess it was all a bit vague. What do you do? Rock up and ask the police if they know if everyone is alive and where they are? It's a motel. People come and go all hours of the day or night. And as far as I'm aware, Jamie didn't tell Jane which room or give a name of anyone. It was a cleaner or caretaker who found the body in the end. Obviously, the authorities eventually put two and two together, and not long after, Jamie was arrested at his grandparents' house. When he was questioned, Jamie said, "Nope, not me. Jane is lying to get me in trouble." And although he was probably the last person to see the victim, it didn't make him a murderer. And maybe people saw him with her, and because the woman looked an awful lot like Jane, they got mixed up. The victim was a lady by the name of Yvette Penner. Yvette was 37 years old and a mother of six. She had fallen on hard times. Once a Sunday school teacher and a devoted carer to her disabled sister. Their own mother was a drug dealer whose clients would abuse Yvette, who did everything she could to prevent them abusing her sister, who was unable to defend herself. The mother apparently had a mental capacity of a 9-year-old, also the emotional capacity too, because when Yvette was 10, she told her mother that she was being abused. Her mother told her to deal with it. Yvette tried. She spoke up again when she was 12 and authorities became involved. It was confirmed that Yvette had been abused, but she was devastated to find that her sister had been as well, even though she had tried to protect her using herself as bait, and she took it really, really hard. She turns to alcohol and has her first child at only 16, a year older than her own mother was when she had her. By 2004, Yvette was on meth. Her children had been taken into care due to the drug abuse, but when she got pregnant for the sixth time, she got support and managed to stay clean after the baby was born when she was in prison and removed from her. She was having supervised visitation and hoped to be able to be given the child back. Until one day, when the baby was a few months old, social services pulled the rug out from under her. Despite the fact she was clean, regular testing, had a job and somewhere to live, the baby was going to be put up for adoption. Yvette was broken. Everything had been for nothing, and it was completely predictable she would want to blunt the pain. She returns to her addiction and goes to the motel and one particular room where she could score, room 9. Jamie never admitted to the police what he had done, but he did give an interview from prison and said, "Everybody goes there to use and pick up drugs. The hotel room, that purpose was for prostitution and using meth. That meth was probably what drew him to the motel too." Hmm?
Does he use or just sell?
No, he uses.
Doesn't sell? Well, we don't know.
We don't know, no. This is 2011. Jamie is slung in jail and refused parole. No idea why it took so long, but he was there for 6 years. 6 years with nothing happening. What happened to a speedy trial? There are at least 6 incidents with Jamie whilst he is awaiting trial. He's caught with makeshift weapons multiple times. Being in jail doesn't stop him harassing Jane either. She said she got a dead rat sent to her in the post and even called Child Protective Services on her, and Jane found herself in prison. Charges were dropped and Jane got her child she had had with Jamie back, but her other child ended up with the father. It takes until May 2017 for the trial to start. It's a mess from day one, and Jamie is arguing with his attorneys, and the evidence from the pathologist was bad. Yvette had been found bound and gagged with stabbing instruments protruding from her back. Sounds like a pair of scissors, doesn't it? Yvette had died of blunt force injuries, sharp force wounds and asphyxia, with prosecutors describing what had been done to her as truly horrific. Jamie said he wanted to plead guilty. His lawyers didn't want him to. They thought he had brain damage, but he wouldn't speak to psychiatrists or psychologists. By the second day of the trial, his lawyers had given up. There was a plea deal. Jamie would plead guilty to 6 charges, which included murder, attempted murder, making threats, assault with a deadly weapon, and trying to dissuade a witness if the prosecution took the death penalty off the table, which they do. Jamie could have gotten the death penalty as it was alleged that the murder contained an element of torture, which by the sounds of it was probably true. That trying to dissuade a witness was witness tampering, him threatening Jane and trying to make sure she wouldn't take the stand, evidenced by the rat, obviously, in the post. The trial is over before it's begun, and Jamie was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole, and the date was significant. It would have been Yvette's 42nd birthday. Big sigh all round, and I bet Jane was cheering too. Of course we're far from done. Jamie goes off to prison. They know he is dangerous, really dangerous. He is kept in a single cell for 23 hours a day, and everyone is on high alert around him at all times at Cochrane State Prison, formerly home to Charles Manson. It's a male-only facility with a capacity for more than 3,000 inmates. They don't always manage to contain him. At one point, Jamie found his way into another inmate's cell, where he stabbed and slashed the man's face. The injuries resulted in 67 stitches. Jamie is also caught another time with what was described as a homemade hatchet, which frankly is terrifying. What on earth can you do with someone like that? Punishment would have no effect. There simply wouldn't be enough staff to one-on-one with him at all times when he was out of his cell. 2019. Jamie is now 31. He is no longer the fresh-faced young man Jane fell for. His face is covered in tattoos. His mouth is described as having the Joker's smile, and he has a pentagram on his hand. I think he ends up with one on his forehead as well, doesn't he, Cameron? He's not a pretty sight at all.
The pictures of him when he was younger, prior to the tattoos, he's quite handsome. There seems to be a thing, I don't know how it is, but Mexican men, when they're young, they have this god-tier hairline. It's stuck in the middle of the forehead and it's there forever. Then suddenly it just fucks off and then it starts to retreat. When he was younger, he was a very handsome man. Even with the tattoos, it almost looks like scars that they can make people look distinguished, whatever. Handsome. Then somehow, I don't know how he does it, when he ages and gets more tattoos, because he's got the pentagram in the middle, but he also has these symmetrical dots, it looks like henna.
Yes.
You know, the
does.
Indian style of like temporary tattoo. He looks Indian. Because when his hair is scraped back and it's receded a bit, with his darker complexion and then the tattoos in that style, it invokes that kind of imagery. Bro changed race in prison somehow. I don't know how we did it, but people will know what I mean when they see it. You won't look at him and think, that's a Mexican man. He looks Indian. He's called Bikram. I don't know how we did it.
You're exactly right, though. Now you've said that, I can see exactly where you're coming from. What puzzles me, though, is the body tattoos that you can see in some of the pictures.
I can't see a lot of them. I can only see the neck trap area, maybe some upper chest. I can't see any body.
But they look professional to me. They don't look like prison tats.
I can see a picture of him from, I think it's the 2007. He went in with one tattoo over his eye, kind of in the typical clown sort of, starts at the top of the forehead, goes down to below the eye, and almost like a teardroppy diamond pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But it's black, obviously, because it's a tattoo. And then when he comes out, he's got it on the other side and he's got more shit on his face. Yeah. And he does have the Joker grin. That never looks good.
No.
It's also reminiscent of the episode we did on Patreon, Nico Jenkins. If you check our Instagram or Google it or whatever, it will come up. But I think his are better because at least they're sort of symmetrical. And I do like the henna looking thing that he's got going on.
Nico's is a mess for definite. We'll talk about that, though, in the case autopsy.
Some people that have face tattoos, whatever, they can look really cool, if they're done really well. Even if you think, that's not what I want. Some people can get these really impressive facial tattoos, and you think, it is intimidating, because your face is missing now. There's tattoos there. But whatever, who cares? But when they're done like that in prison, and you know who he is, it's far gone.
Yeah. Well, for the first time ever, Jamie is given a cellmate. Luis Romero, aged 44. Jamie had been on his own for over 2 years at this point. Lewis had been a bad lad. He was 27 years deep into a prison sentence. He had been convicted of second-degree murder after shooting and killing a woman in Compton when he was a teenager. That shooting was associated with gang activity. Lewis had been expected to be released on parole in the next couple of years, but he got into it with a prison guard and was transferred to Cochrane State Prison. He was there for 2 days when on the 9th of March, officers doing their normal rounds tell Jamie he has to remove a sheet that he had placed over the cell door, blocking the viewing window. That reveals a gory scene, and the officers enter and find Luis dead. Jamie had managed to get a razor blade and wrapped it in string to use against Luis. He probably decapitated Luis first, as I doubt he would have stayed still to allow Jamie to cut off his right ear, remove his eyes, remove part of his ribs and lungs. Jamie had also slit Luis's mouth wide open in a similar way to his own tattoo, as a representation of the Joker's smile. Jamie had also written ha 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 in Lewis's blood. That's not disputed. Some places mention that he had also written, "I am the man with a thousand faces." I couldn't find that phrase in what court papers I did get hold of. It is also said in many places that Jamie was found wearing Luis's body parts, including either a finger, singular, or fingers he had cut off around his neck.
Have you not seen any of the images of the prison cell and him?
No, I didn't want
to. So they do say that. They also says, "I'm not mad, I'm just..." What does that say?
I've got them.
I'm not mad at all. I'm just differentially fuck sane. What? And then it says freak. I don't know what that says. It looks like a stage from, I don't know, a movie called Saw, well, you know, the Saw movies, yeah. And a movie called Seven, which had Brad Pitt in it. There is just guts and sinew and body parts, so much blood everywhere.
I know exactly how they got those pictures. And I was going to talk about that elsewhere, but I'll talk about it now.
He's got a phone and he's taking pictures of it.
Him.
Well, there's definitely a picture. Yes. There's a picture of him with, well, it's like a piece of red string around his neck with body parts on him.
Yes, it's not from him. This is why there's a lawsuit in place. The prison guards lied. They forged records to say that they had checked the cell, that Luis was alive. And then when they found the body, these prison officers are going in and taking pictures on their personal phones and then sharing it. That's why Luis's mother is suing the prison service. None of that should ever have happened. And now those pictures are out on the internet, and I didn't go looking for those on purpose.
Well, in my defense, I didn't go looking for them. I Googled his name like a good little co-host, and then that showed up. I saw a decapitated body on a cell bed and a man with body parts around his neck. I didn't expect that, to be honest. Usually when I Google people's names, it's much more subdued and normal.
Again, like Cameron said, I did wonder, though, how you would string eyeballs and lung parts to make a necklace, but I stopped myself researching. The district attorney, in a statement later, said that they believed that Luis was conscious for some of the attack. It's possible Jamie attacked him in his sleep, I guess.
Why did he attack Luis, though? I don't understand why. I thought it was a rival gang thing, because he was in a gang when he was younger. Luis is as well, but if they've only been cellmates for 2 days, unless it was that, and then they're not going to do that, because the prison checks you for tattoos and puts you in, you're in gang A, you're in gang B, you're in different wards, you're in different wings of this prison.
We don't know why. I'll explain now. You could be right, but it does happen, and it's happened since, that they put rival gang members in the same cells on purpose. It's suspected, but not proven, this is why there is a lawsuit, that Luis ended up there in with Jamie as a form of punishment because he'd attacked a prison guard.
Yeah. If you're meant to be in inmate protection, say you've assaulted a woman or you did something with kids, usually they get put away for their own safety. But if you've done something to a guard, oh no, you accidentally ended up in Gen Pop.
That's exactly what is believed that's happened with this. So, of course, Jamie was charged with murder along with extortion. I've got no idea why. Intent to cause extreme and cruel pain and suffering for revenge, which could feed into what you've just said, Cameron, and persuasion for a sadistic purpose, which is a mouthful, and I've no idea what it actually entailed. But I do know that this could lead to the death penalty again. Jamie was also charged with throwing blood at a prison guard earlier. We then end up in the limbo of lockdown, and many, many hearings were held over video conferencing. In May of 2020, Jamie tells the court he just wants to plead guilty, but he has a request. He wanted all of the crime scene photos. That request was stamped on hard. The judge said that there were 205 photos taken of the crime scene and 67 autopsy photos. Almost all of them are extremely graphic or violent, he said. That's probably not including the stuff you found on Reddit, which was probably taken by the guards. Jamie had also tried to get a hold of the crime scene photos from when he attacked that prisoner that needed 67 stitches. And that was blocked, as everyone knew why he wanted them. The photos were trophies to Jamie. Not a teaspoon or whatever weird thing you said years ago, Cameron. I can't remember what you suggested to take as trophies. Was it teaspoons?
I think it was teaspoons, yeah.
Yeah.
No one's going to miss that. But then, I don't know, I get this weird, I don't have autism, but I get this weird autism buzz thing. If I'm around someone's house and they give me a weird spoon, I don't like it. Why have I been given this spoon? It's not shaped right. So I probably couldn't take spoons in hindsight.
Jamie refused to speak with psychiatrists, but in January of 2021, he was found incompetent to stand trial after hundreds of pages of medical records, including mental health records, had been turned over. Jamie was refusing to take meds. They thought he was displaying psychosis. He was also diagnosed after reading all the reports, as he refused to talk to them, with unspecified schizophrenia spectrum, which apparently isn't a diagnosis, which makes absolutely no sense. He could be schizophrenic, but they've got nothing to base it on because he won't talk to them. But they also said he had antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, which I think, and post-traumatic stress disorder, which could be a thing after his bloody childhood. Criminal proceedings were suspended and Jamie was transferred to the psychiatric inpatient program at Salinas Valley State Prison. Months later, they declare he's now competent and ship him back to Cochrane. June of 2022, Jamie is giving press interviews again. This gives you some insight into what is or is not going on in his head. And this is where he says some of what you talked about, Cameron. He says, I recognise myself as one who is not afraid to indulge himself without the consequences. I'm self-made and I'm proud of it. Make of that what you will. Initially, Jamie had a court-appointed attorney, but he fires her, gets another one, who was then replaced by a private attorney in December of 2022. That lawyer would not say who had paid for him, but said he had been contacted by a number of people who wanted to pay for Jamie's defence. Also in December of 2022, Jamie gets his sentence for the murder of Yvette changed. The resentencing was necessary due to a 2020 change to the law addressing what were called enhancement for prior prison terms. And all defendants previously sentenced with that enhancement must be resentenced. Doesn't make much difference. He got life without parole originally, and yet the reports then say he gets a year off the sentence. So he probably got more than life without parole because mention is made of life without parole plus 7 years to life, plus 20 years. I'm baffled by this point because what's the point in going through all that for such a small change if a year off is correct? And that is even before he goes to trial for what he did to Luis. There are also claims by Jamie that he killed two other people. One when he was 13, so in 2001, and then another in 2007 when he would have been 19. There is absolutely no way to verify this. Highly unlikely he would voluntarily sit and tell police officers what happened, and with his mental health issues, they would probably struggle to believe him. I do have some statistics for crime in Bakersfield in the case autopsy, but I will say now, it's a dangerous town and hundreds of murders go unsolved every year. Also, 2007, for that second supposed murder, is the same year Jeff, the hated stepfather, died. But it doesn't seem to have been any sort of catalyst to anything that I can join the dots to. And that really is the end. Still waiting for a trial. If they're as slow with this one as they were with Yvette's trial, we'll be looking at probably 2025 or 2026. That's also assuming they don't take their eyes off him again and he doesn't kill someone else. There are lots of videos on YouTube about Jamie. A few podcasts, but no books or documentaries. He does like to talk, and they let him talk. So I have no doubt he will come up on one of those Piers Morgan killer tales type shows at some point. Maybe his whole face will be black with tats by then.
It's his third race change at that point. So we're just waiting for his trial now for both murders.
Yes.
Does anything happen involving Jane, his wife and the kids from that? Does anything happen anywhere?
No.
Do you have anything about Luis's mother suing the prison service?
Only that the case is going ahead. There was a lot of problems with it, that people's names were misspelt in the papers that were filed, and that throws all sorts of spanners in the works when you do that. So it's been refiled, but I've got no idea where it's gotten to.
If the COs had just missed it, that's one thing, but it's the fraud that they're going to get in trouble for more than anything.
Yeah.
If you owe the government taxes and you forget or you mess up, that's one thing. But if you attempt to like hide it or defraud in any way, that's when they throw the book at you and you go to prison forever. Stupid stuff happens. It's the same thing with this. If they had just missed it somehow, they probably wouldn't be in trouble or be culpable. But because they said they checked in him and he was fine and he wasn't, that's why she probably has a right to sue and get some sort of compensation.
Yeah, the governor of the prison admits that there were some bad prison officers, and we know that happens. But he says most of the people that work for him are good, but I think they're going to hang a couple of them out to dry. It's weird, though, that that lawsuit only mentions the ha 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 written on the wall. It doesn't mention anything else. That's why I didn't realise it was real. And I did look on Reddit, so maybe I've got my filters set to a different level to yours, Cameron, so I don't know.
I don't know if we can put those images up anywhere. Mm. I could blur out the actual body part for it to sort of be okay, but that would only be on Patreon, I think, because Instagram wouldn't like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair, is it? He's still a victim at the end of
the
day.
I'll blur him out and put it on the Patreon. Yeah.
And so we wait. And finally, the victims who should not be forgotten. Yvette Penna, aged 37. Luis Romero, aged 44.
And that, everyone, is the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can find our Twitter and Instagram in the description below, as well as the old Patreon link if you want to show some support. If you're on the Patreon, hang around. You know what's coming up next. And we'll see you next time. Peace.
Bye.